Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take the sources you send our way, pull out the key details, and really try to get our heads around some of the, well, stranger corners of history.
And today, we're definitely in one of those corners. We're diving into a story that puts fate, like inescapable destiny, right up against human choice and free will.
It's a fantastic tension. We've got this stack of material, local history, some personal accounts, even a bit of psychological analysis, all centered on this truly unsettling figure from East New Jersey, early 1900s. They called her Lunatic.
Lunatic. And yeah. The name itself is, well, something. But what really grabs you is her supposed method.
Exactly. That's the core hook, isn't it? This woman, Lunatic, apparently worked as a fortune teller. You'd go in, she'd look at your palm, and then she'd hand you this little slip of paper.
Not with vague advice, though.
No, not at all. It had a date on it, an exact date written in ink. And she claimed that was it, the day your life would end.
Imagine getting that. I mean, just imagine. It becomes this this invisible timer hanging over everything.
And here's the critical piece, a part we really need to unpack. The local sources, the legends anyway, insist she was always right, that her predictions were infallible.
Which is a huge claim. So that's our mission today, really. Was Lunatic genuinely tapping into something? Some kind of foresight? Was she an agent of fate?
Or, and this is the other side of the coin, was her accuracy actually down to something else? Like, was it a really sophisticated kind of fear-mongering? Using psychology to make people comply with the prediction, turning it into a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's the debate. We'll be looking at how just knowing a supposed end date can rewire your choices, why fear is such a potent tool for, well, control, really, and how even someone totally skeptical might start to waver when faced with their own alleged deadline.
It's destiny versus defiance. Let's get into it. Okay, first things first, the setting, because this is just odd. We're talking early 20th century East New Jersey. And Lunatic, this supposed oracle of doom, she sets up shop.
Hmm.
Where?
In an outlet mall. A regional outlet mall. Not some hidden den or mystical grove. A cramped little storefront right there in the middle of commerce.
It's almost funny if it weren't so creepy. You've got this ancient idea, prophecy, fate, reading palms, happening next door to, I don't know, discount shoes or something.
It's a perfect symbol in a way. This clash of old dread and modern consumerism. Her shop stood out, obviously. It was an anomaly.
And the sources say people felt it. They describe the place as unsettling. A lot of locals apparently just avoided it entirely. She was strange. The shop felt weird.
But being in an outlet mall meant constant potential traffic, right? So even if locals steered clear, there was always a fresh supply of curious shoppers or maybe desperate ones. Her reputation could still spread.
It's like destiny on clearance, the commercialization of fear.
And that commercial setting almost amplifies the shock of what she offered, because when people did go in, she wasn't dealing in the usual vague stuff, you know, you'll find happiness, a tall, dark stranger is coming. None of that.
No ambiguity. She gave you one thing. Certainty. Fatal certainty.
She'd read your palm, take out a slip of paper, write down that date. An exact, inked date. That's it.
And that physical object, with the paper, the ink, the numbers, that's the anchor, isn't it, psychologically? It makes the abstract threat concrete, something you hold in your hand.
Absolutely. Specificity is the key here. If she'd said, you'll die young, well, you could argue about what young means, but October 12th, 1928, there's no wiggle room.
And again, we have to stress, the sources lean heavily on this legend of her accuracy. It's repeated constantly. Locals said she was never wrong. That belief is the engine of her power.
So think about getting that slip. You walk out, maybe you laugh, maybe you're terrified. But even if you consciously dismiss it, That date is lodged in your mind.
It has to change how you live, doesn't it? You start measuring time against every little thing that happens. A near miss on the road, catching a bad cold. It starts to feel like foreshadowing, like the clock is audibly ticking towards that day.
That's the self-fulfilling doom mechanism kicking in. The fear isn't just passive, it actively starts reshaping your decisions, your perceptions. It relates back to something we've touched on before, the inspector story about Monopoly.
Right. Refresh us on that connection. How does that apply here?
The idea there was that the game wasn't just random luck, it was conditioning the player through its structure. The phrase we used was, the game trains you before it pays you.
Okay.
Luna's prediction works the same way. It's a training tool. By giving you that specific date and planting that seed of fear, she essentially trains your subconscious to operate within that timeline.
So the fear makes you comply. Maybe you become hyper-cautious as the date approaches, trying to avoid any risk. Or maybe the opposite.
Exactly. Maybe you become reckless, thinking, well, I can't die before that date, so nothing matters. Either way, your behavior shifts dramatically because of the prediction.
You become an unwitting participant in making it come true, potentially. Whether she could actually see the future or not becomes almost secondary.
Her real skill, perhaps, was weaponizing that specificity, giving people a fixed point of dread and letting their own psychology do the heavy lifting.
It's a system designed to undermine your sense of agency. Your belief in the prophecy becomes the very thing that validates it. Okay, so Lunatic has this system running, fueled by local legend and fear, operating out of this bizarre outlet mall location. But what happens when someone pushes back? Someone who represents logic, order, skepticism?
Enter Officer Pepperoni. He's our catalyst for escalation. He wasn't just some random doubter. He was an off-duty police officer. Grounded. Rational.
And the sources are quite clear on his motivation, right? He didn't just wander in.
No, he went to that cramped little shop specifically to debunk her, to expose her as a fraud, a charlatan preying on people in the mall. He was there to prove free will wins over this kind of manufactured destiny.
So he goes in, presumably demands a reading, fully expecting some kind of vague prediction or maybe a date decades away that he could just laugh off.
But Luna dealt in immediacy, didn't she? She takes his hand, looks at it, and reportedly gives him the absolute shortest fuse possible. The most terrifying immediate prediction.
Which was?
Today will be your last.
Wow. Just today. That cuts through everything.
Yeah.
No time for doubt to fester over years. He has maybe, what, hours until midnight.
It's a direct challenge to his skepticism, his authority, his whole worldview. It's basically saying, your logic means nothing. Your time is up now.
So how did Officer Roney react? Did he crumble?
Not according to the accounts. His first reaction was apparently loud, contemptuous laughter. He insulted her, called her a fraud outright.
Okay, that sounds more like the skeptic we expected.
And he made a very public declaration. He told her he would be back tomorrow morning alive and well, ready to have her arrested for, you know, causing public nuisance, maybe fraud or extortion.
So he sets up the ultimate test case right there. If he wakes up tomorrow, she's vanished, the legend collapses. If he doesn't, well, the implications are huge.
It's the perfect crucible. Fate versus free will playing out in real time over the next few hours.
But there's always a but in these stories, isn't there?
There is. And this is where we see that first subtle crack in the skeptical armor. Despite the bravado, the laughter, the certainty, Officer Roney made a choice that night.
What did he do?
He decided to stay home. He didn't go out on patrol, didn't go meet friends. He stayed in. The reason given, just in case.
Just in case. That little phrase speaks volumes, doesn't it? It's a world away from the confident dismissal in her shop.
It's the tell. The seed of doubt, that cold whisper of what if it had gotten through. The fear mechanism had found a tiny foothold.
So this trained officer, committed to reason, changes his routine. He voluntarily restricts his own freedom, his own will. For that one night.
He wasn't actively testing the prophecy by living normally. He was passively obeying it by trying to control the environment. He essentially put himself under house arrest out of fear.
He thought he was controlling the variables, but by doing so, he was already conceding ground to the prediction itself.
And that's precisely the kind of subtle compliance Luna's method might have relied on. Even if she couldn't actually cause death, she could manipulate behavior through fear, make the subject act in ways that might, ironically, inch them closer to fulfilling the prophecy, or at least confirm her power in their mind.
She didn't need magic, maybe. Just that sliver of doubt,
yeah.
Just in case. All right, so Officer Roney is home, trying to wait out this terrifyingly specific deadline. He's skeptical, but spooked enough to stay put. The sources say he managed to doze off around 10 p.m.
Trying to sleep through it, maybe? But then comes midnight, or just after, and the situation shifts dramatically. From uneasy waiting to outright terror.
Because he wasn't alone anymore.
No. He wakes up suddenly, and Lunatic is there, not back in the outlet mall. She's in his bedroom, standing over his bed.
That is terrifying, the violation of it. From the public space of the mall to the absolute private space of his bedroom. How did she even get in?
The sources don't specify that detail, which only adds to the creepiness. But her presence alone shatters any sense of security he might have clung to.
And then she speaks.
Yes. And what she says is just chilling. According to the account, it was a quiet, almost polite apology. Sorry, did I wake you?
Oh, come on. That's not an apology. That's a threat delivered with horrifying intimacy. It implies she was watching him sleep, waiting for that midnight deadline to pass, or perhaps to strike right at that moment. It suggests premeditation.
Absolutely. This wasn't random. This was targeted. She was there, seemingly, to enforce the prediction she'd made hours earlier.
So naturally, a fight breaks out. Roni's a cop. He reacts.
Instantly. But the account suggests Lina was surprisingly forceful, agile even. He tries to get away, gets out of the bedroom, but she pursues him down the hallway.
And this is where it gets philosophical again, right? She's shouting something.
Yes. As she's chasing him, she's reportedly yelling, "I'm just fulfilling your destiny."
Wow. Not "I'm getting revenge" or "you shouldn't have doubted me." It's "I'm just the messenger doing fate's work."
Well, exactly. She's framing the assault not as a personal act, but as a necessary step in a preordained cosmic script. It elevates the whole thing. She wants him to understand, even in his terror, that this isn't just an attack, it's destiny unfolding.
So even if he survives, that idea that his life's end requires this kind of intervention is planted in his head.
Precisely. The chase ends dramatically. She tackles him, apparently, and they both tumble down the stairs.
Okay, a violent confrontation. What happens then?
They both land hard. Both are apparently knocked unconscious, or at least stunned for a moment. This pause is crucial.
Roni comes to first.
Yes. He recovers faster, and his police training kicks in immediately. Adrenaline, instinct. He needs to secure the threat.
And he has his cuffs.
He does. He manages to get control, restrain Luna, and cuffs one of her wrists securely to the stairwell railing, a solid, permanent fixture.
Threat neutralized? Suspect apprehended? Seems like the skeptic won.
Logically, yes. He subdued her, the prophecy time is technically passed, and he runs out immediately to get back up, get help. This should be the end of Lunatic's legend.
But it isn't, is it? Because of what happens when he returns.
Exactly. The astonishing reversal. He comes back with aid. The sources imply it was very quick, just minutes later. But the scene has changed impossibly.
Luna is gone.
It vanished completely.
But the cuffs.
Still there, locked, secured firmly to the railing, empty.
Okay, wait. The railing is intact, the cuffs are locked, but she's not in them.
That's the core of the impossibility. The empty stairwell, maybe some signs of the struggle, and those damning cuffs locked around nothing but air still attached to the railing.
That image. The locked, empty cuffs on the railing, that's everything. It proves the fight happened, confirms Roni's account of restraining her, but her absence defies any normal explanation.
It confirms the reality of the encounter while simultaneously shredding the laws of physics as we know them. So, this moment, the empty cuffs on the railing, this is where the story tips over from a strange encounter into enduring legend. Because the official records, the accounts of the event, they essentially freeze right there.
They capture the struggle, the cuffing, the return, the absence. But they offer no solution, no explanation for how she disappeared.
It reminds me again of that concept from the Real Wendy case. Records can freeze while lives keep moving. The police report, or whatever official account exists, documents Officer Roni's testimony, the physical evidence of the cuffs, but it hits a wall. It can't explain the vanishing act.
Right. So let's really dig into the two main interpretations here.
Yeah.
First, the proponent view, the fate argument.
If you take the legend at face value that she predicted his death that day, showed up in his house right after midnight, fought him, was physically secured, and then vanished from locked restraints, well, that demands something beyond normal explanation.
From this perspective, her goal wasn't just murder. It was enforcing the date on that slip of paper. She was acting as fate's agent.
And her vanishing when seemingly foiled, that could be seen as proof of supernatural intervention. Either she dematerialized or some other force extracted her because the immediate mission was, perhaps, paused or failed. It points to an external reality manipulating events.
Okay, that's the fate argument. Powerful, given the circumstances. But what about the skeptic's view? The fraud and fear argument.
The skeptic asks, Could this be less about actual magic and more about an incredibly risky, high-stakes psychological operation? Think about her shouting, "I'm just fulfilling your destiny," during the chase.
You mentioned that earlier. Why is that phrase so key for the skeptic?
Because it's perfectly calibrated to maximize the psychological impact regardless of the outcome. Even if she gets caught, she's planted that seed. But if she escapes impossibly,
then the vanishing becomes the ultimate confirmation of her words. It proves to Roni that he wasn't just fighting a crazy woman. He was fighting something inescapable.
Exactly. Her disappearance becomes the final, most potent piece of psychological evidence cementing her power in his mind and in the legend that follows.
But we keep coming back to the how. How does an unconscious, cuffed person vanish? That physical impossibility is hard to just brush off as psychological manipulation.
It is. It requires either incredible skill, like a hidden lockpick, an accomplice waiting for the exact moment Roni left, some pre-planned escape mechanism involving the railing or cuffs we don't know about, or, yes, something genuinely inexplicable.
Collusion, maybe. Someone let her out.
Possible, but requires perfect timing and silence. Or perhaps a master escape artist technique. It's difficult to square with being unconscious or stunned moments before.
This feels like the Klaus Richter situation again, doesn't it? Where the lack of evidence becomes the proof.
Precisely. Erasure becomes the evidence. Her vanishing creates this impossible gap in the narrative. If she'd been dragged off to jail, identified, exposed as, say, a former stage magician with a grudge, the legend dies right there.
But because she disappears, leaving only the locked cuffs.
She leaves behind an enigma. The fate proponents see supernatural proof in that gap. The skeptics see an incredibly calculated move, maybe the riskiest escape plan imaginable, designed specifically to leave behind that enigma, to fuel the legend and the fear.
So the core conflict for Officer Roni and for us analyzing it is, was his terror the result of touching something truly predetermined, an external fate?
Or was it the result of a brilliant, terrifying manipulator who pushed all the right buttons, exploited his deepest fears, and used an impossible escape to make him doubt his own free will, his own senses, for the rest of his life?
Even though he survived a predicted day.
She still won, in a way. She turned the ultimate skeptic into her most compelling, albeit traumatized, witness. Her absence echoed louder than her capture ever could have. The vanishing act was the masterpiece. Hashtags tag outro. So when you piece it all together, you see how this lunatic legend works. It uses these incredibly vivid, specific details. The cramped outlet mall shop, those inked dates on slips of paper, the officer's initial laugh turning to fear, the midnight whisper in the bedroom, and crucially, those empty cuffs locked on the railing.
Yeah, those images are powerful. They ground the story. And that final image, the cuffs, becomes the anchor for belief. It's the physical proof locals could point to, making them accept the stories of her accuracy, whether those stories are strictly documented fact or just, you know, persistent folklore.
And for Officer Pepe Roni, the night itself had technically ended. Midnight had passed. He was alive. The date on the slip had expired.
He should have felt relief, right? Victory, even. He challenged this destiny, fought back against its supposed agent, and survived. He seemingly asserted his free will over the prophecy.
But the story, as recorded in these sources, doesn't quite end with relief. The psychological impact, the fear mechanism Luna set in motion, it wasn't dismantled just because he lived through the day.
There's a final beat.
There is. It suggests the encounter, the escape, wasn't necessarily the end of the attempt, just a pause. It implies the prophecy, or perhaps the entity enforcing it, wasn't giving up.
So Roni is back in his house.
Yeah.
Alone again. Presumably reeling from the fight, the vanishing act, the violation. The silence must have been deafening, filled only by the memory of those empty cuffs.
And this leaves us, and you listening, with a really provocative final thought drawn from the end of these accounts. If destiny sometimes requires, let's say, physical intervention to ensure its timeline.
Like Luna attacking Roni.
Right. And if that intervention fails, if the agent is thwarted but escapes, what happens then? Does fate just shrug and move on? Or does it reset the clock? Is the failed attempt, the chase, the terror, the impossible escape, is all of that just part of a larger, more patient, terrifying design?
He survived the day. He's lying there, trying to absorb it all, trying to believe he's safe now. But the sources say, from the darkness of his own home, he heard something else.
A soft voice. A final chilling promise that suggests fate isn't bound by a single 24-hour cycle.
Just a whisper, implying the ordeal wasn't truly over. Host expert, simultaneous echoing whisper. Let's try this again.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.